No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bro. Curry food.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 92 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we'll talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and then ask, what's the day diddly deal with day? I should have known something was suspicious when you had that camera trained on me.
Go to our Instagram to see footage of Paul saying that.
So,
a better question, perhaps, is it time to boycott Daya?
We'll find out.
Indeed.
Will you get answers by the end of this podcast? Probably
You'll
not.
You'll be more confused than ever. But first, Paul, we got a little announcement. I can't believe it's that time of year again. But
I can't believe it's not butter.
Which is now vegan, or they have a vegan version now.
Oh.
Yeah. Little announcement. It's been a year since this happened, but we have once again been nominated for a Veg News Veggie Award.
Hooray!
You know, so we are in very good company with some other podcasts that we love and respect and admire, but if you feel we have earned your vote and you want to give us some support, go ahead and give us a vote. You can just Google Veg News Veggie Awards. We'll put a link in the show notes. And also, if you go to our Instagram, that is what our link on there is currently for. So you can do that. And if you're feeling extra kind, you can go vote for Compassion Company for favorite online retailer.
I'm glad you said something because I was about to say that.
But Paul.
Yes.
Something kind of interesting. So people that do this survey have a chance to win some prizes, and there's like a grand prize and then like all the way a bunch of smaller prizes going down. The grand prize is a cruise for two on the Holistic Holiday at Sea.
Huh. That sounds a little familiar.
Yes.
Andy, is there a previous episode that you can name off the top of your head that we've talked about this?
I would say episode 82 is a vegan cruise, an oxymoron.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, it is. So, yeah, kind of a bummer that this is the grand prize. So, for those who may have missed that episode, vegan cruises in general are rife with human rights violations and are basically floating sweatshops. But, you know, specifically the cruise line that Holistic Holiday at Sea uses has had some big issues as well. So, bummer to see that as the grand prize. Yeah. But I do hope that a Beardo wins that prize and then rejects it.
Yeah.
Rejects it outright. Someone on the Instagram suggested that they donate back the like monetary cost of those tickets and be like, spread this out amongst all of your workers.
Oh, the cruise ship coworkers?
Yes.
That'd be nice.
So yeah, send a little statement that way. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's always, you know, We're a silly little podcast, but it's still an honor to be recognized and nominated. So, yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you. So, Andy, I haven't really been eating anything exciting this week, but looks like you got a couple things.
How many times have you eaten at Blackbird this week, Paul?
Just twice.
So I think anyone that's like recently started listening is like, wow, they only eat in like Connecticut, New York, and Philly. But yeah, stick with it because, you know, we're always traveling. We're always all over the place. You've moved.
I've traveled two states over.
Yes. But, you know, stick with it because depending on the time of year, we cover different restaurants depending on where I am at. And this past weekend, I actually did not have a veg fest at all, but I flew out to Missouri for a wedding. And I flew into Kansas City, which is actually one of my favorite cities to visit. Always a shining beacon in the Midwest. There's a bunch of good spots with vegan options. They have an Alamo Draft House, which is my favorite movie theater chain because they keep a strict lockdown on talking and texting, which just makes my heart flutter. But while I was there, I got to go to Mud Pie, which is a really fantastic vegan bakery and coffee shop. It's a great place to sit, and I've edited the podcast there many a time. And I picked up some plain snacks from Food, which is a vegan, like, kind of comfort food type place in Kansas City. They were closed, but Mud Pie carries their sandwiches. And I was like, sandwiches, great plain food. And I got this Smoky Witch. And, you know, I'm sure the sandwich was made a few days ago. It was like a Sunday that I picked it up. And I'm sure they dropped it off at least on Friday. And I have to say, it was... So delicious. Not the ice cream. It was just a very tasty sandwich. It had this smoked tofu in it that was thoroughly smoky. It was just like the most satisfying smoky flavor. Very firm tofu. So it was like, you know, a step down from the firmness of like tofurkey or something, but it wasn't like a bunch of mushy tofu. Yeah, yeah. And they had like a couple different types of mayonnaise on there, and they had those little tiny pickles on there that I love so much. I don't know why I like them, because baby corns really creep me out.
But baby pickles,
baby pickle, all about it. And it was very delicious. So I really just want to go back and get that fresh from food next time I'm in the area.
How was the vegan scene at the wedding?
Well, the couple that was getting married lives about 2 to 3 hours from any major city and like an hour and a half from any major highway. But they had it catered by Take Root Cafe, which I've mentioned on the show before, which is the kind of donation-based cafe.
Oh, yeah.
That had a few vegan options, but their whole thing is that they're like local and organic and all of that good stuff. So the vegan options at the wedding were plentiful. Basically anything that wasn't clearly not vegan was vegan.
Good.
So and everyone was just raving about how good the vegan food was, and even something as simple as like the rice and beans and the curry veggies, everyone was like, these vegetables are so good. And the vegan dessert they had were poached pears, which I don't know if I've ever had, but they were absolutely delicious.
That's good.
Yeah, so no complaints on that end.
Nice. Very nice.
So if you're ever in Kirksville, Missouri, so far from everything, go to Take Root Cafe.
One listener's like, yes, yes.
Slow clapping.
And I think we'll have some exciting food, hopefully, to talk about in next week's episode.
I believe so. We're going to be striking out. But by the time listeners hear this, the Animal Rights Conference will have just ended. But we are about to embark on a trip to the conference starting tomorrow morning.
Yes.
And that means we're going to D.C. That means soul food will be consumed. Apparently, there might be some pierogies on the horizon, which always tickles my fancy. So, yeah, should be exciting.
We'll report back next week.
Hell yeah.
So let's get into the news then.
Paul, what's first item on the docket?
So first item, egg company reports $74 million loss due to vegan alternatives.
I feel like if we had a soundboard, this is where we would put like a sound effect.
And then applause afterwards. So this is coming to us from Veg News. Giant egg company Calmain Foods CEO says vegan alternatives are responsible for the company's first big loss of profits in over a decade. And basically they released their earning report in 2017, and the numbers did not look so good for them. And for the first time in over a decade, the company reported a loss of $74.3 million in the last fiscal year. And they plummeted $24.5 million in the fourth quarter alone, which is in stark contrast to the $367,000 that the company lost in the same time period last year. So exponentially more money that they lost. $367,000 last year to $24.5 million this year. That's...
dang-a-lang.
That is a major loss. So... yeah, I guess that's a little bit of good news for today.
A little silver lining on this shit sandwich that is the political climate of the United States right now.
So let's hope that this trend continues. And I don't know if there's anything else to say about it.
Do you think these are the people that wanted to put the hit out on Josh Tetrick?
I mean, if I was about to lose $74 million, I probably still wouldn't put a hit out on someone. But
what are you, some kind of compassionate human being?
But I think it is very encouraging that obviously this news article is from Veg News, so maybe the CEO listed a few things, but the fact that allegedly the CEO did say that the vegan alternatives are responsible for at least some of this decline is a good sign.
Yeah, and I mean, if I had to guess, it would have to be due almost entirely to mayonnaise. Because even though Father Heart has the vegan egg, I feel like that's really still a super niche thing.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people who are not vegan who just prefer veginaise or Hampton Creek, the just mayo, or you know, things like that. So it seems like it would just be straight up mostly from the mayonnaise.
$74 million worth of mayonnaise right there.
It's a lot of mayonnaise.
Maybe that means that this company will now take the Hellman's route and make their own vegan mayo.
Ed go swimming in $74 million worth of mayonnaise?
I actually tried the Hellman's this past weekend.
I thought you were going to say I actually tried swimming in $74 million worth of mayonnaise.
Not as much mayo as you think. My I went home in Connecticut and my parents had gotten the Hellman's, now called vegan mayo, and not just what was it, like specially crafted sandwich
carefully crafted sandwich dressing and salad spread or something like that.
So silly,
just spreading some mayonnaise on your salad.
it's encouraging to see the Hellman's kind of that whole timeline of like, we're going after just mayo, we're losing against just mayo, we've come out with a vegan mayo but we have some pride left and we can't call it vegan mayo, and now just like, fuck it, here's the it's vegan mayo, here you go.
Yeah, it's interesting how Hampton Creek is like really kind of hiding the word vegan on their packaging, and like Hellman's is like, now we're going for it.
Yeah
hold true. My drink.
Just Hampton Creek got that hidden egg in their logo.
Yeah, not anymore.
Oh, really?
Did you see their new packaging?
Not in person, I don't think.
Yeah. It's very striking in person. I don't know. You see it in person and you're like, how did CVS store brand get into this grocery store?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's just like generic,
kind of? Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people are mixed on it.
Are they just trying to like blend in even more? Is that
they said there's a whole article, I'll try and find it, post in the show notes, and I'll also forget about doing that, but that like the brown paper label was like too boutique brand.
Oh.
And that a lot of consumers that weren't used to looking for that and realizing what that kind of symbolized, they thought that that meant it was like the lowest common denominator, like, oh, this company is like so cheap that they just have like a brown label and they don't have anything else special going on. So
people either thought it was like the one extreme, too expensive, too unique, or like the other extreme.
Yeah, and some people thought it was too fast or too furious. Tokyo Drift.
I think we don't have anything.
Are we at the bottom of the $74 million mayonnaise pool?
I've eaten my way out. So let's move on into our next topic. Slightly more controversial, slightly less positive.
Indeed. Kind of a bummer story. But so this is coming to us from the Houston Press. Angleton's Rowdy Girl Vegan Animal Sanctuary fined for suing critics. So longtime listeners of the show are familiar with Renee King Sonnen and Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. I feel like she's come up a couple times. I believe it was in that Vegan Everyday Stories film. It was probably when we most prominently talked about her. I've seen her speak a few times. I've met her in person. And we've never really talked about this on the show because nothing was ever like super concrete, but they'd kind of always been followed by some vague rumors of being a scam or misappropriating funds a little bit. And all of what we're about to talk has been happening for a little while, and I was not aware of it. But this article came out talking about a ruling in this case. So reading a little bit from this article from the Houston Press. A Harris County District Judge has ordered that the owners of an Angleton animal sanctuary to pay nearly $29,000 in sanctions for filing a frivolous, harassing lawsuit against critics of the sanctuary who called the operation a scam on Facebook. The couple had sued the critics in February for $1 million, accusing them of conspiring for nearly 2 years to disparage the sanctuary's reputation. And the critics that were being sued are former volunteers and donors of the sanctuary. And essentially saying that, you know, the money that was being raised wasn't being used appropriately, that it was being used more for the personal expenses of the owners of Rowdy Girl, Renee and Tommy Sonnen, and not as much on the animals. And there's two cases where animals supposedly died of preventable pneumonia, including the beloved Herman the pig.
Oh, no.
And Herman O'Herman. So, just to read a little bit more from that article. In his lengthy reply, the critic's attorney, Adam Milicinchik, wrote, "There is no doubt what this lawsuit is designed to achieve, stopping the public debate around Rowdy Girl and silencing critics who raise questions about Rowdy Girl's less-than-stellar fundraising and animal welfare records." And so basically the gist of the comments on the Facebook is that Rowdy Girl tends to fundraise aggressively and then spend more of the donations on the couple's personal expenses than on helping the animals. So this is kind of a bummer. We were trying to find like really specific examples of all this stuff, and like the whole ruling is available online, and because they're a nonprofit, their taxes are available to the public, and there's all sorts of kind of minutiae that people were digging through and posting about. But I think that more so than being concerned about this sanctuary and the misappropriation of funds, I'm just like tired of seeing people using legal means to like silence their critics, which is something that we like see in this movement, like in the case of sanctuaries, but also in the case of like abusers. And it just, I'm glad that this was ruled as frivolous. I mean, $1 million, you know, is such a, like you were saying that, Paul, that just seems like such an overreaction to what was going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure that if you had someone that was on your Facebook all the time saying it was a scam, I'm sure that that would be annoying, but
yeah,
seems like they're doing all right. Like I see her, Renee, speaking all the time and raising donations and all that stuff. I think that when we see people using lawsuits to silence their critics, that is a big red flag. And I think, you know, it's not proof of anything, but I think that that should be a really big red flag to anybody mm-hmm. out there, that this is a tactic that's used to, you know, sue people to get them to shut up, not because you're going to prove that you're right, but because you're going to prove you have more money than them, or you have better lawyers than them, or it's going to take too much time out of their daily life. And I think people should call bullshit on that and really give the side eye to anyone that's doing that and really examine what their motives might be. So that's why I kind of wanted to bring this news article up. It's something a little different than what we normally talk about, and a character that's been in our, you know, in the show before. So
yeah.
So yeah, call bullshit on that shit.
Well put.
Yes. So let's move on to our third and final news story of the day. Paul, you found this one. Yes. Lay it on me.
This is coming from SF Chronicle. Assume that stands for San Francisco Chronicle.com.
It sure does.
Berkeley Butcher Shop puts up animal rights sign after protests.
Droopy Dog?
Berkeley Butcher Shop.
Berkeley Butcher Shop puts up animal rights sign after protests.
So basically, reading from that article, a local animal liberation group convinced the owners of a Berkeley butcher shop to put up a sign in the window that reads, "Attention, animal lives are their right. Killing them is violent and unjust no matter how it's done." Aaron and Monica Rocchino, I believe that's how it's pronounced, owners of the local butcher shop, agreed to the animal rights organization's demand to post their sign after 12 weeks of Sunday protests. And essentially, they had the animal rights group had tried to work out different things with local butcher shop. For instance, the protest group, one of the options they presented was for them to change into a vegan butcher shop. But then ultimately what ended up was the butcher shop agreed to put up this sign, and the animal rights group agreed to only protest twice a year.
That's definitely a case of like shoot for the moon. If you land short, you'll end up in the stars kind of thing. Like, how about you change your entire business to be vegan? No? Okay, here's a sign you can put up.
Yeah. I also think it's kind of comical that it's like, I don't know, they've signed some agreement that's like, we will only protest twice a year. And it's like, I just feel like it's like the butcher shop is just going to set up this like fenced area. It's like, all right, you can just go right there, do your thing twice a year.
It's the biannual protest.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just close the store today.
Yeah. Like. And then reading a little bit more from the article. In recent weeks, neighborhood residents had begun counter-protesting the group, Rocchino said, not necessarily because they were customers of the shop, but because they were tired of the disruption. And the final thing I wanted to say, the article points out, is that the animal rights group does consider this a victory.
Do you consider it a victory, Paul?
I think it's for like 12 weeks. It is different. It seems different to me because it's like they've basically annoyed this butcher shop so much to put up a sign that like directly, you know, it would on its surface seem to directly counter what is actually going on inside that shop.
Yeah.
It just seems like so much work for like such a little thing. Even if it was, well, it says 12 weeks. That's like 12. If they were out there for an hour, it's like 12 hours just for this one little piece of paper. It seems like a lot of effort for a little gain. I'm also curious as to why, like, this shop was picked. That's literally called the local butcher shop. It's like, so I'm imagining it's a very small shop. I'm sure they don't sell, I'm assuming, but they don't sell like a tremendous amount. I mean, any amount is bad, but it seems like an interesting target.
From what I gathered, they were targeting butcher shops and restaurants that sort of push the humane myth.
Ah.
So that's why they were going after this particular butcher shop. But I agree. I wonder what the sign is going to do. You know, obviously it of course harkens back to like the warning labels that get put on cigarette packs.
Yeah.
And we interviewed Alex Felsinger a while back about his article that was discussing the tactics of this group, actually. And one of the things we didn't talk about in the interview, but in the article, was kind of talking about how we often like to compare the vegan movement to other civil rights movements or social justice movements involving humans, but that, like, in reality, there's actually a lot of parallels that we could look to for, like, the anti-smoking campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of me is like, oh, is this actually, like, is this productive? Is this kind of along those lines? But it doesn't really appear to have had any effect, according to the owners. Obviously, they probably don't want to admit that it would have an effect on their bottom line, because that would make it seem like the animal rights activists had won.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, is the time worth it to get this one sign up in one butcher shop versus if you were going to take that route, lobbying to get the labeling on packages of meat and cheese and eggs and things like that?
Or even just stickering around supermarkets, spending however many people they had. Let's say they had 10 people. If 10 people spent those, say, 12 hours stickering, that would be a heck of a lot of it. Like, if they went out every Sunday and stickered around different supermarkets and stuff, that seems like the sticker thing seems more effective to me than this. And here's one reason why, is because if people are going to a butcher shop, they are going for a very specific thing, and that's animal flesh. If they're going in the supermarket, it's like, yes, that might be on their list of things to buy, but most people aren't going, you know, and being like, okay, this is my day that I go to the supermarket and just buy meat.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they see that, that might, it's like, they're still going to be buying other stuff, but that might dissuade them from that one thing.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. This is like psychology that I have no, I have absolutely no foundation to be making this claim, but that's just what it seems like to me.
All I'm wondering, and this is a totally random thought, do you think there's a supermarket for dogs called the Supermarket?
I think you just stumbled upon a gold mine. That's what I think. TM, TM, TM.
Yeah, the whole time you're talking, that's all I can think about.
That's okay.
But yeah, the stickering seems to strike me as more effective than putting up this sign in this butcher shop. I think for like a number of reasons, one of which is that the protesting was obviously very conspicuous, whereas like the stickering is just someone going in and like covertly putting mm-hmm. these things on. So, you know, people can see that sticker and be upset at the person that did that. But the people that are in the neighborhood of this butcher shop see this group of activists and have like a bunch of faces to attach to their ire and like hatred of this. And like you said, the counter protesters, I wonder what they were doing. I wouldn't be surprised if they're out there like cooking hot dogs or something.
Yeah.
But you know, they were counter protesting not because they were customers, but because they were tired of the disruption. Maybe they were neighbors that were tired of the noise, and they just thought that it was ridiculous, and you know, that it's like bullying a small business into changing their practices.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like we've said on the show before, I think that there is place for pressure tactics, and we've talked about examples of what we think potentially be effective in the past, but usually it's when you're pressuring someone to do something that like isn't really the biggest of deal to them, like dropping a company from their stock portfolio or something like that, whereas like petitioning a company to just change their whole business, it seems like it's such a big ask that it's way less likely to get done. And maybe their goal the whole time was just to get this sign up, and like maybe it is, like, maybe one or two people will see that sign and be like, oh, you're right, animals' lives are their own. But I think you're also right, Paul, in that like people going to a butcher shop, they know what they're going for, and like it's less disconnected from the reality of where that flesh is coming from than if you just go to a supermarket and like pick up the package.
Yeah. I also think it's alarming when the article says like that it's these neighborhood residents that are doing the counter protesting. It's like the community doing the counter protesting, and I feel like it could be harmful to the movement if we get the communities against the animal rights movement.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think we always need to be worried about public perception. Again, sometimes I think there's things that we could do that the public doesn't love but actually has concrete results. But this doesn't seem like one of those situations. It just seems like a really weird way to get a lot of people to get really angry at vegans.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the kind of thing that could have like the backfire effect, which, you know, people are like, they feel they're being attacked and they get even more stubborn and they double down. They're like, well, now I'm going to go on my way to go to this specific butcher shop just to like, it's the whole, well, for every hamburger you don't eat, I'm going to eat five kind of thing.
Or like you said, like the counter protesters probably cooking up hot dogs and stuff like that.
You know, it's not like those were hot dogs that wouldn't have gone and eaten. They probably would have eaten them at their own homes, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's not a good look. It just feels like it's not productive. Like, it doesn't get anything done on almost any level other than, like you know, you, I don't know if it's, like, what the right word for this is. Extortion? It's threats? It's, you know, like, whatever. Like, you don't, you give us what we want, and or we're going to keep protesting.
Isn't that what any protest is?
I mean, that's what a protest is, but it's, like, you know, it's not, like, raise our pay or give us better benefits or we're going to keep protesting. It's, like, put this dinky sign up in your window or we're going to keep protesting.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of like outsiders would look at that and be like why do they want this sign up there? Like, who cares?
Yeah. Like, they were willing to go through, put so much time.
Yeah. And like, I hate to play the, well, they should have done this instead if they're going to use their time on this, but it's like, yeah, like, what do they have, a dozen people out there protesting? And like you said, what if every Sunday they took an hour each to go put those stickers around or, you know, go talk to people about, you know, vegan education or like whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have when you're deciding to do one thing, you're deciding not to do something else. And they could totally be doing all that other stuff for the other 23 hours of their day on a Sunday. So I, you know, don't mean to discount that. But think about like what a well-coordinated effort to do stickering would potentially accomplish.
But Andy, those things don't look as good on in a video.
That's true. Less likely to be declared a victory. Because yeah, stickers is just something you can do, and if you don't get arrested doing it, that's your victory.
Yeah.
Essentially, like, you didn't browbeat some business into like giving up, basically.
Yeah.
And just feeling like so defeated, they're like, whatever, we'll just put this sign in the window.
Yeah, kind of humiliating.
Yeah, I don't know, it's like the Scarlet Letter being put on them or something. Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly the right analogy, but it just feels like it's not a good look for vegans. It's not a good look for animal rights. It's not accomplishing anything.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll find out more about this in DC this weekend.
Perhaps. Perhaps we will.
But on that note, should we get on to our main discussion of the week? This is a hot topic right now.
We've had a lot of people asking us to talk about this. I know that it like came out like right after we put our last episode out, or like right after we had recorded our last episode. So now we're talking about it like 2 weeks after it happened.
Yeah.
And who knows what kind of developments are going to happen in like the week between when we're recording it and when it's actually out.
But we appreciate you requesting our uncredentialed take on this these matters.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think originally it was like, oh, this will be like a quick news item, but so many people are like, what do you think about this? So we're gonna try and get into all the little delicious melty nooks and crannies of this story,
those globby nooks and crannies.
God.
So the hot topic we are referring to is of course the vegan cheese brand Daya being acquired by a pharmaceutical company, Otsuka.
I'm glad that you clarified the vegan cheese brand Daya.
Well, I was
not bicycle manufacturer Daya.
I was half reading the article title and half trying to say it in my own words. But yes, this article from Veg News is called "Vegan Cheese Brand Daiya Acquired for $325 Million."
It's a lot of money.
It's a tremendous amount of money. International brand Otsuka announced today that it will acquire Canadian vegan cheese brand Daiya Foods for a sum of 406 million Canadian dollars, which is 325.5 million US dollars. Essentially, this Japanese company plans to expand Daiya's presence in North America, and then eventually they plan to expand it globally. And this Veg News article, what it really doesn't highlight is the fact that a lot of people are now choosing to boycott Daiya because of Otsuka's tie to their animal testing for their pharmaceuticals.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, the internet is ablaze with the furious wrath of at least 5,000 vegans.
People, they have grabbed their pitchforks and torches and are storming the message boards.
Storming the melty, cheesy castle of Daiya. Yeah, claiming everyone needs to boycott Daiya. They're not a vegan brand anymore. And basically, my first question to you, Paul, is... how much vegan mayonnaise could $325 million buy, and how many pools does that fill? Second question is, so I've seen basically two reactions to this. There's the one that you've already detailed, which is the grab your pitchfork, boycott Daiya. They're not a vegan company anymore. They've lost our trust. They're just greedy. They don't care about the animals whatsoever. And then there's kind of this camp that's just like, how dare anyone question this move from Daiya? You know, 10 years ago, for instance, when I went vegan and Daiya did not exist, and everyone's like, why can't we have a cheese that melts? And then we got a cheese that melts, and at the time, Daiya was really good. And then everyone was like, well, why can't we have it in pizza chains? And now we have it in pizza chains. Well, why can't this be everywhere? And now we're going to get it everywhere. So why are you complaining? Yeah. So there's like these two camps of like burn it to the ground and walk away. And the brands are like, how dare you possibly question this move that Daiya has made? So which camp do you fall into? And do you think there's possibly a third or fourth camp that is some midpoint between those or even further out to the extremes of those point of views?
I mean, I think people can definitely, I'm sure there are a lot of vegans that just don't care. That's another camp, the don't care camp.
Yeah,
The DCC, but I'm definitely not in the boycott Daiya camp.
So that mean you love animal testing, Paul?
Shut up! I don't see you having a T-shirt against animal testing, Andrew. Well,
that must be what it means, though, according to the internet.
So
if you don't want to boycott Daiya, it means you love animal testing.
I think it would be in the world we live in. It is extremely difficult and inaccessible, I would say, to only support 100% vegan sources. I would venture to say impossible, unless you only grew your own food and like lived in the woods.
Yeah, I would go as far to say there is no such thing as a 100% vegan source.
Yeah,
in that it depends. Like, there's like a line to be drawn. And obviously everyone's going to have a different line. I think that's probably what this story is about, is like, where is your line? But even a company, so like, look at me, my clothing line. I do everything I can to make sure the things are switched out free and USA made and all that stuff. And like work with
water-based ink,
all that good stuff. And like work with people whose ethics I like and all that stuff. But like, you know, so I work with a vegan designer in Poland, and it's like, okay, well, she's only going to go buy vegan products, but like, is the vegan product that she's buying from a store that has, you know, non-vegan, even say it's even a vegan store, but they have a non-vegan employee whose wages are then going to provide them the ability to go purchase animal flesh hamburger, you know, and it's like, it'd be so hard to find 100% vegan chain down the line. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to support companies that you think are like within your values, and that you should just throw your hands up in the air going, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, because I think that's a cop out. But I think that there is no such thing relating to this kind of conversation as a truly 100% vegan thing. And it just depends how far down the line, how many employees getting paid and suppliers getting supplied and all these things are you willing to look down before you're like, okay, two employees down the line, I'm okay with whatever they're buying. I have to accept that it's probably not going to be vegan kind of thing.
Yeah. And I like that you said, because I hadn't thought of this, that like there's a line that everyone is going to draw in the sand. And for some people, Daya like is that line and they will not support Daya. And I in no way would discourage someone from wanting to not purchase Daya because of this. I don't even want to say I'm going to discourage people from voicing their opinion, but it's like I would disagree with...
You're not about to file a $1 million lawsuit?
I would disagree with them like posting, this is what you have to do or this is what you should do. You should boycott Daya. You have to boycott Daya.
A proclamation that's you're not vegan if you buy Daya anymore, that kind of thing.
Because like I was saying, it's like I don't think it's bad to want to only... shop at from companies that are 100% vegan or as vegan as it's possible to be. Or I'll say this, they only make products that are vegan.
Yeah.
But Daya, the product, is still vegan. Daya itself is not, as from what we know, is not going to be tested on animals with, and it's not going to become non-vegan. So the product itself is still vegan. And I think there's value in supporting companies. See, Daya is an exception because they were an all-vegan company and now they're bought by someone that's not. But in general, I think there is value in supporting companies that produce more, that produce products that aren't vegan, but supporting just the vegan products. I do think that it encourages those companies to put more money into those products. And I think the kind of proof, I will say in quotes, that that works is the fact that besides Daya, other vegan companies are being bought by non-vegan parent companies because those parent companies are seeing the value in producing vegan products. And I think that that's, you know, if we can get more of these companies to see this, it's like, hopefully the hope is that they'll produce more vegan products and they'll phase out the other ones. Just like we were saying with the egg thing, it wouldn't surprise me if, like you said, you suspect that it has to do with mayonnaise that they lost so much money. It wouldn't surprise me if they put out a vegan mayo to try and make up some of that money.
Yeah.
So that's my initial thoughts on it. I'm not going to say, no, you shouldn't boycott Daya. Like, you have to buy Daya because there's so many. It's awesome. There's so many now brands of vegan cheese to choose from. I would say keep buying the one that you want to buy. You don't have to get Daya. But I don't think. I guess, Andy, let me ask you this. Like, what would be gained by boycotting Daya right at this stage? What's the hope for you think for people that are boycotting it? What are they hoping for?
That's a good question. Like, I've been trying to kind of ring over that and think, like, okay, if Daya decides to withdraw from, they're not merging, but partnering up with Otsuka, if they withdraw from that, does that mean that Otsuka will test on animals more or less or the same amount? Does them having Daya in their portfolio somehow increase or decrease the amount of animals that are harmed in the world? Obviously, and I'm talking about from like an immediate standpoint, we acquire this company and now we're going to be testing on animals more. Do you think someone can make the argument, well, like Otsuka potentially make more profits from Daya and they'll put those profits into one of their other branches that test on animals?
I think that's fair.
It's possible. Yeah, it's definitely possible to say. Some might also say, well, if they're making money from Daya, why wouldn't they keep putting that money into Daya to like reinvest? Mm-hmm. I don't think we can really truly say either way exactly where the profits that they're going to gain from bringing on Daya into their family tree of companies and branches and whatnot, what it's going to be. But I don't know. It's like too hard to like truly say. But when we think about what can be gained by Daya joining up with Otsuka, supposedly this means that they'll have access to better distribution channels. They'll have more money to do product development and more money to do advertising. And, you know, one of the main reasons that Otsuka brought them on is because they're trying to expand into the to global markets. Mm-hmm. So potentially it means more people have access to this vegan cheese. And that it's hard for me to, even though I don't think that we're going to buy our way out of, you know, the problem we're in, we're not going to spend our way to animal liberation. But it's hard for me to ever see it as like a negative thing when the options for vegan food expand.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if them doing this, like I would hope they'll start maybe in Japan since it's a Japanese company. And I do not know that much about the vegan scene in Japan right now, but I guess it'd be cool if, like, just like how Daiya for the U.S. kind of became, for a while, like, that was the vegan cheese. It's like, maybe that's what will happen in Japan if there's not... I don't know if there are vegan cheese options in Japan. Like, maybe that's what it will become there, and then maybe they'll be able to expand to other places. Like, I think that'd be really cool if that... even though we... don't think Daiya is the best vegan cheese, but it's still like, if it's there, if it's, because I mean, I think we can both, I don't mean to speak for you, I can appreciate like what they've done for the vegan options in restaurants, that like for whatever reason that became the thing the restaurant go to if they needed a vegan cheese.
Yeah like you're like, for a while, Daiya was the vegan cheese here. And I get what you mean, because it was kind of like the only one that actually melted. And at the time, I remember I was on tour in New Orleans, and the only way you could get Daiya was like, it was from like the deli department, and you had to get it in like a Tupperware container, essentially. Huh. You know, like when they're like, oh, give me a pound of tofu or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But it's like that, but you're like, grate me off a pound of the Daiya. And they had it, and we got it, and we went back to the house we were staying at, and we're like, quesadillas for everyone, and we're just making it, and we're like, you gotta try this, it's amazing, it's so good. And that's like, so it was funny. It was mind-blowing at the time, because I think back, did you ever have vegan Rella, Paul?
No.
Yeah, it's as bad as the name. Like, there was not a lot of great vegan cheeses out there, and like, even though there's other cheeses on the market in the U.S., it's still like, if you go to you're like, if you find a random pizza place that has vegan cheese, it's almost definitely going to be Daiya.
Yeah.
I think that like one time I found one that made like their own almond ricotta and my mind was blown. And that was, they'd switched from Daiya to that. Mm-hmm. And one time I encountered a place that had Fall Your Heart shreds, which I think are like pretty decent. But you know, Daiya is ubiquitous, and like, you know, as much as I dislike it, I mean, like, my first thoughts was like, y'all should boycott that shit because it sucks. Like, you're still eating Daiya. But like, for a lot of people, Daiya is the accessible vegan cheese for them. It's usually the cheapest one that's out there. It's the one that you can find, you know, if a grocery store has a vegan cheese, it's I guess it's either the Galaxy whatever, which half the time has casein in it, mm-hmm. or Daiya shreds. And it's cheaper, and it's like easier to find, and so it makes vegan eating more accessible. Not that people have to have vegan cheese, but it's like, we don't want people to go without things. We want to make it as easy as possible for people to be vegan and stay vegan. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But what I wanted to bring up was, a lot of the discussions around this kind of come from a position of assuming that in order for Daiya to expand and to become that ubiquitous brand in Japan or whatever, wherever else they want to expand to, that they have to partner up with a non-vegan company, that's like the only way to make that happen. And I'm wondering if that's the case. Like, I can't think of some giant global company that is all vegan that they could partner with, but I had never heard of Otsuka before. I'm sure there's a billion companies I haven't heard of before. And the reason why I said there was at least 5,000 vegans that were really angry about this is because there is a change.org petition up there with the title, Keep Daiya Vegan, Reject the Otsuka Acquisition. And at the time of this recording, it has 5,507 supporters. So there's this one little bit from their write-up on this petition that I wanted to read that kind of addresses this. So it says, We believe this is not only a total betrayal of the ethics and core values that this company was founded on, but worse, it is proving that all the critics were right. You can't be vegan and be world class. That you can't be vegan and share in real success. That you can't be vegan and be a global success. We reject that completely, and we are saddened and disheartened by their weakness and greed.
Yikes.
Yeah. Harsh words. Harsh words. And I mean, one, it's, I don't think they can really say what like the founding core principles of Daya was. Like, I think people are assuming that Daya is this brand that's like, we're all about the animals. But, you know, there was a big hubbub 2 years ago about how they were allowing non-vegan recipes onto their website.
Although, I mean, when Andy and I were trying to find either articles or those exact recipes, they definitely took it off their website. And I did see explicit mentions on the website of like all vegan, like no animals harming in this. Obviously, they could just be throwing that on there for the label. But
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if after they did that recipe thing with, I think it had, there were some meat dishes. Like it seems like they responded correctly. I don't want to say correctly, but it seems like they responded in what we would deem as an appropriate way, which is to like say like, oh, like, yeah, we should take this down. You know, they're probably just possibly just doing it because that's what's going to make them the most money. But
and also, I mean, you could make this argument in the counter, in the reverse. And also you could make this argument in the reverse as well. But like, I bet they're like, listen, if there's some like chicken quesadilla recipe, and we have vegan chicken listed, if someone really wants to put animal flesh chicken in there, they could. Like, yeah. People aren't that like unaware of how to cook that they don't know how to replace a simple thing. So why not just leave the vegan thing on there as the default? And if people want to make it not vegan, they can. That's their choice.
Yeah, when you were asking me the question, I was trying to think in my head of any like vegan product that is global. Do you know of any like vegan global products? Like, I'm trying to think of all like the meat replacements and stuff that I eat, and as far as I know, they're mostly just US. Maybe some of them are also like UK as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the things that excites me about traveling to other areas is that I have friends in the UK and Australia and I guess Germany that are like, this is our vegan cheese here. They have like their Daya,
yeah,
you know, whatever it is, they have their version of that for their market. That's like their standard thing and their standard meat replacer brands that I've never had. And I'm like, what if they're so much better?
Yeah.
Like I want to try them, but then do I want to try them if they're never going to be accessible to me?
So, those vegan Starburst, but, so is that a good,
I'm just thinking about filling a pool with $324.5 million worth of vegan Starburst. Backstroking through it.
But the reason I was bringing that up was, so at our current stage of how popular vegan products are, is it impossible to have a vegan product that is owned by a vegan company that is distributed worldwide? Like, is there enough of a market that they could afford to do that? Like, is that even possible at this point? Or is what Daya is doing kind of pushing towards that agenda? Like, it's not exactly what we want, but it's like, is this the first worldwide, possibly going to be the first worldwide vegan product? And then does that then open up the door to all these other possible products? And it opens up the door for a vegan company to realize that they will have the market to do that? Because as far as I can tell, or as far as what I know, which is not much, it doesn't seem like a company would be able to produce at that scale. Like, I'm thinking of the solely vegan products, the biggest ones in the United States. I'd say tofurkey. And tofurkey, Andy and I did our research, dear listeners. Tofurkey, owned by Turtle Island Foods, is all vegan or vegetarian. So it's not all completely vegan, but it's vegan or vegetarian, and they have no parent company. I would say that is one of the biggest that I can think of. Like, I don't know if tofurkey is even in the UK. It might be, but I guess we can find out. But that's like the biggest that I can think of, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to be worldwide. Like some another one I think of is like Upton's, which I think is relatively small for how widely available it is.
Yeah, yeah. And they're expanding overseas as well. I know that's been a process that they've been engaged in. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, they don't have a parent company.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Amy's, that's another big brand. They're actually independently owned. I was doing research and I was like, wasn't one of these companies bought out? And it was Annie's. They're owned by General Mills, which I'm sure has a lot of values that a lot of vegans would not necessarily agree with.
You know what, Andy? Let's go through this.
Let's do it.
We did our research.
Hopefully it's all right.
Yeah. Hopefully Wikipedia was not lying to me about
the internet would never lie to us. All right, Paul.
Yes.
Silk/Vega/So Delicious.
Owned by Dannenwave. Interestingly, though, before you go on to the next one, Dannenwave is a combination of Dannen, which I think most people are familiar with, their yogurt. Dannen bought out another company called White Wave, which even though this Veg News article listed White Wave as a plant-based milk, while Silk was a part of White Wave, Silk, Vega, and So Delicious were a part of White Wave, White Wave also had other non-vegan products like milk and dairy yogurt.
Yeah, that was like a thing for a while. It was people like, oh, you can't have Silk anymore because they're owned by White Wave.
It's the same. I feel like it's basically the same thing that people are arguing right now.
Yeah.
But yes,
a tale as old as time, Paul.
Yes, so those are all owned by Dannenwave.
All right, Light Life.
Is owned by Maple Leaf Foods, which also produces meat products.
Damn. All right, Paul.
Yes.
Are you about to break my heart? Gardein/Earth Balance.
Don't say it. They were bought by Pinnacle Foods, which own other non-vegan brands.
Not my tenders.
Not my tenders.
Morningstar Farms.
Not that we care. Is a division of Kellogg's.
Listen, I still stand by their riblets. Those are delicious.
I don't think I've ever had Morningstar in my life.
At the wedding I went to, there was like a barbecue and like the vegan burger was Morningstar burgers. And I was just like, oh, we've come so far since these.
Are those vegan now?
They have vegan burgers.
Oh, okay.
Paul.
Yes.
Coconut Bliss.
Owned by Lakme Dairy, who used to package So Delicious.
Ooh. So Delicious went from Lakme to Dannenwave.
Yikes.
Dang. All right. We talked about this before, Beyond Meat.
Got that 5% investment from Tyson, which I think is similar but different than what most of these other ones are, which is these other ones are owned by these companies, whereas this is like an investment, which still, it's like Tyson is kind of getting their...
They'll get a percentage of profits.
And they have some influence, yeah. I suppose.
And then not really food unless you choose to eat toothpaste and deodorant, but just throw this in for good measure. Toms of Maine.
Owned by Colgate.
And they definitely test on animals, so... and we say all this not to make you throw your hands up in the air in frustration and be like, well, what can I eat? You know, just out in the backyard clipping blades of grass or something. But I feel like ultimately what this points to is capitalism is horrible and evil and a monster that eats all things good and just in this world.
Yes. And if I have to make a prediction about what's going to happen with this DEA thing, I think people are going to stop caring about it in 5 weeks, because I, now that you pointed it out, I do absolutely remember people having a very similar reaction about Silk. Mm. And again, I'm going to say this, I already said it, but I don't blame people for not buying DEA. I'm not going to say you can't buy DEA. I'm not going to say you have to buy DEA. I'm not going to say you have
it's
to
buy It's our duty as vegans to buy DEA. It's like when someone's like, it's our duty as vegans to watch Unity, and you're like, back it up, son.
So it's like, but again, it's like, I do think there is value in some people buying these. Now, maybe you could say like, well, this is what non-vegans should buy. They should all buy Silk and DEA. But it's like, they're not going to buy it unless vegans buy it too.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
Maybe for DEA. Silk I could see, because I think almond milk is on the rise.
Yeah, it's pretty ubiquitous. I was just watching Better Call Saul. Netflix has a great download for offline viewing feature, perfect for airlines.
This episode is sponsored by Netflix.
And in Better Call Saul, they just like casually were like, oh yeah, I get my coffee with soy milk Just like they mentioned it at least twice already. Huh. And it's just like this thing that's in pop culture now.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's a totally, for many people, normalized thing. I've said this many times, but, you know, so many people drink almond milk, more than soy milk, but people drink vegan milk alternatives at increasingly growing rates. And that's why we see the rates of dairy consumption going down, 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 at least in terms of liquid milk. And that's why we see the milk glut and all the milk being like just poured out into the fields because they can't sell it all, which is horrific and horrible thinking about what those cows went through to produce that milk. But it's just like, I think you're right. With Silk, I think people are going to be buying that regardless.
So let me ask you something, Andy, because I think that the Silk situation is very similar to what this is, but I would imagine that many people that are up in arms about Daya are purchasing Silk products. I mean, I'm sure some of them do at least.
Yeah.
Is testing on animals worse than other forms of exploitation?
That's a good question. I think the folks, the utilitarian folks that purely look at things by the numbers of animals exploited, they would say anything involved with food is worse. But I think you could also make the argument that animals used for testing are held for much longer, and they are, at least in terms of like monkeys, and even dogs and whatnot, they're like aware of what's happening to them. I remember I was reading They All Had Eyes by Michael Schlesinger, and he said specifically with the monkeys, and I'm sure a lot of pharmaceutical testing is rats and like, you know, rodents and rabbits and whatnot, but that the monkeys were the most depressing because you could tell that they knew that the monkeys was the most depressing because you could tell they knew that tomorrow was going to be the same thing, you know, like essentially they realized that they were here, they were stuck, and this is going to continue to happen to them, and like how absolutely horrific and horrible that is.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when they do kind of the maximum tolerated dose test, those are, you know, on like rats and animals that are like much more disposable, generally speaking. But I think that you could say that what happens to animals used for testing, some might argue that it's more horrific than what like a cow goes through. But again, a cow that's being used for dairy is kept alive for, you know, four and a half, whatever years before they are killed. And I think that that's a pretty miserable life.
Is it worth comparing? I think because the reason that I bring this up is I think animal testing is one of those things that the general public is more against than dairy consumption or meat consumption. So is it just more of an issue because culturally, at least for us, it's more of an issue?
Kind of like how people think of fur as so much worse than leather, kind of thing.
Or like in a similar vein that you're more likely to get a non-vegan to be against fur than they are to be against meat. Like, is that culture seeping down into vegans who are now saying like, I'm okay with drinking Silk, or I'm okay with eating So Delicious, but I'm not going to be okay with this because this is animal testing. And even though Daya, the product, is not as a result of that animal testing, like its involvement in animal testing makes it worse.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I feel like this is kind of just a case of like the outrage of the week kind of thing. I think that if next week someone reposted stories about, you know, Silk being bought out, Silk is like not as much of a beloved brand at this point. Like, you know, again, Daya was a trailblazer for vegan cheese. Like when I first went vegan, every single vegan cheese advertised that it actually melted, and literally none of them did. And Daya was the first one that kind of actually did.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, we finally have our cheese. And so I think people feel more betrayed. But yeah, say that Gardein, like next week a story came out that Gardein was bought out by someone that was, you know, like a cattle rancher or something like that. Yeah. I think we would see the same wave of outrage and people would still be pissed off. I don't think that it would be less because it's meat production versus animal testing.
Okay. Can I put in my two cents, Andy?
If you must.
Must
you?
I mustn't, but I will.
That's what we're here to do.
I'm going to throw this out there. I think that vegans should put this effort into making vegan products more ethical, whether that be palm oil or ethically sourced chocolate. It's like, I think that that's where our, in terms of this stuff, I think that that's where our efforts should lie.
Yeah. I think I would probably have to agree with you there, because as we were talking about before, it's probably not going to make a huge difference of the amount of animals killed, you know, for animal testing, if Otsuka acquires Daya or not.
Mm.
But, you know, working to make sure that our vegan products are ethical could have an impact.
Yeah. So, something else interesting. If you haven't seen this, you can go to the Daya Facebook page and you can see a little video put out by the two CEOs talking about this merge. I don't know if is it a merge? Is it a buyout?
I think it's an acquisition.
Okay. And
check out their great smiles.
Their soft tones. Soft, gentle voices.
I'm gonna lull myself to sleep with their soft, dulcet tones tonight.
But something interesting that they say, they're very excited about this.
Are they? They say they're excited.
They say that they're excited to, I'm paraphrasing, to kind of connect with this company that shares similar values as them. And those values that they're talking about seem to be like wanting to create more ethically sourced food, more sustainable food. It's weird because Daya's trying to push this health thing too. Is there, like, I don't think Daya is really that great for you.
No.
But they're trying to push that too, so maybe that's part of it. But it seems like the CEOs were like, oh, we're excited to merge because they share these same values as us. Is it possible that Otsuka will learn a thing or two about the ethical nature of things from Daya?
I wouldn't hold my breath for it, but it's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
A time traveler could materialize in the kitchen right here. That's possible.
Oh my God.
So let me ask you this, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone that says it's not vegan to purchase Daya now. Is that any different than, say, purchasing vegan items from a non-vegan grocery store, of which is like 99.99999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 most, you know? And like, is there any difference? Like, if the argument is, well, if you purchase this product, you're supporting horrible things happening to animals because the parent company is going to make profits. Well, like, is it morally, ethically different than purchasing a vegan product from a grocery store where the employees are likely not vegan and they're going to go spend their wages on non-vegan things?
Or even if they were all vegan, the fact that 75% of the items that they sell are not vegan.
Yeah. And it's perpetuating the consumption of animal products just by making them available to people.
I'm going to say, I mean, it's a different situation, but I think it is very relatable. I think that it is very similar, and for the same reason that I'm not... I think one of the differences is that it's much more accessible to not buy Daya than it is to shop at a vegan grocery store.
Or to just not buy food in general.
Yeah. You know what I mean, though? Like, I think you have... most of us do not have the choice to not shop at some store that's selling non-vegan items. Yes. Or that's employed by non-vegan people.
But you could choose to just straight up not buy the Daya. You don't have to have cheese on your pizza.
So while I do think it is similar, I think we'd run into more trouble trying to promote people not shopping at non-vegan grocery stores.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's from 99.999% of people, that is impossible.
Yeah, no, I definitely see your point.
Like, we've gotten to this point in society where most of our, I mean, we didn't get to this point. It's always been that most grocery stores wouldn't be vegan, you know? So it's like with the popping up of all vegan grocery stores, which they are starting to pop up slowly, then we, I guess then we have to make the decision as they become more accessible.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question, Paul.
Just firing them at me.
This is coming after a slew of, for whatever reason, a bunch of non-vegan ice cream companies announcing that they're coming out with vegan, like, lines. Mm-hmm. You know, we just had Haagen-Dazs most recently, Breyers, obviously Ben & Jerry's. And those things, obviously there were naysayers. There were people like, why would you still purchase...
Ben & Jerry's was a big one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but it was like, people were like, why would you still purchase ice cream from a company that profits off the exploitation of cows? Same thing with the Tyson thing. You know, I'm not saying that no ire was drawn at all from any of these or any of the listings that we gave of the various parent companies. But in my non-scientific measurement of this, it seems like people are way more outraged about this than the other things. Like...
Or they're more organized in their outrage.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there was too many change.org petitions for the Ben & Jerry's one. They just couldn't get together. So, I mean, is it just because this represents a step backwards? Is it kind of like the Cafe Gratitude thing, where it's like, well, obviously a lot of vegan restaurants are owned by non-vegans or have non-vegan managers or whatever, but if a vegan restaurant... You think the owners are vegan and then they stop being vegan. It's like, it feels like a betrayal. Like it's a step backwards, but for the other ones, it's like a step forwards. But like, I don't know. I would wager you're supporting animal exploitation more by purchasing the vegan product from like the vegan Haagen-Dazs versus the Daya.
I would agree that what you said, the reason that is why is because this is being seen as a step back. It's a beloved vegan company doing something that's decidedly not vegan versus a non-vegan company doing something vegan and people being still skeptical about it. So I do think that that is why people are more outraged about it.
But
do I think that's warranted?
Yeah.
I understand it. I understand it more.
Paul understands the outrage.
I think for the reasons that we listed, it's... I personally don't see a great benefit in boycotting them, but I do think it is understandable. And for the same reason why I get why people wouldn't want to buy Ben & Jerry's because they're awesome. Well, I get why I wouldn't want to buy Ben & Jerry's because of the chocolate thing, but because I get why they wouldn't want to buy it because it's also, they sell non-vegan ice cream as well. It's like, I understand it. But I'm not going to say anyone has to buy any of these things, you know. No one has to buy Ben & Jerry's ice cream. No one has to buy Daya.
What? Man, I keep buying containers of Ben & Jerry's and they melt in my van and I just have nothing to do with them.
Spiders crawl all over them.
Well, okay. So is a potential positive of this, of getting these non-vegan companies to embrace vegan brands, that we'll stop seeing things like the war on Hampton Creek? You know, like say some like egg brand decided to purchase a vegan mayo company, purchase Hampton Creek or something like that. Like, would we stop seeing so much antagonism against vegan brands from non-vegan companies? And would that be good? Like, what do you think, you know, would Hampton Creek be so much further down the line in getting all the things they said they were going to do if they weren't wasting their time dealing with the lawsuits and all of this shit that they've been dealing with?
I'm sure it set them back. Undoubtedly, the money that they had to spend and the time they had to spend in that, I'm sure set them back. I think if Hampton Creek, let's say, it was purchased by a bigger non-vegan company, I'm sure other companies would be less likely to sue them, if only because I think one of the reasons why they thought they could sue them was because it was like this monstrous company bullying this small startup company, you know?
Yeah.
And they thought that they could win because of the money. I think if it was two equally large companies, they'd be less likely to sue them for, you know, the kind of BS reasons that they were trying to sue Hampton Creek.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yes. Do I think it's necessary to do this? No, I don't think these smaller vegan companies need to do this. Although at the same time, I don't kind of fault them like Daya. I don't fault them for wanting for you know, it's like, I don't know what's going on in the Daya boardrooms. I don't know how they operate. It's like, I'm sure they talked about this and this is what they thought was the best choice to spread Daya. Maybe that's not what happened. Maybe they said this is the best choice to get as much money in our pockets as we can. Who knows? But
they operate with a big toothy grin.
But you know, it's like, I would hope that their reasons are because they actually want to expand this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I'm prone to giving them the benefit of the doubt here. I think that they want to expand these products. Obviously, they stand to benefit, profit from doing so. But I think that, you know, their goal is to get non-dairy cheese into the hands of as many people as possible, and this is going to help them do that. You know, Paul, I never thought we would be talking so much about Daya in a single episode.
Now we just need Otsuka to buy Blackbird Pizza and then force them to use Daya again.
Oh no. No, Paul. So yeah, I mean, I guess to sum up, for me, the question I posed to you in the beginning was, like, there's the camp that's like boycott and the camp that's like, how dare you question this move that Daya's doing? Like, don't you fool see what they're trying to do? And I feel like there's like room to be like, I understand what Daya's doing. I don't love that they're partnering with this company, but unfortunately that's kind of the reality of consumerist veganism.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it has its limits, and it shows that we're not gonna, like I said, we're not gonna buy our way out of the problems that we're in. It's a piece of the puzzle. I think we need these products to be available to make it easier for people to go vegan. The easier it is, the more people will go vegan. But I don't think it's the key and only solution out there. But I think it's like, if you're going to play this game, then you want to try and be thorough with not purchasing from companies that have non-vegan parent companies. And that's like a really hard thing to do. And therefore, it's like, it's a hard thing to put on like a new or aspiring vegan. You know, like, I wouldn't cast aspersions on anyone that's like, I'm not going to purchase these because it doesn't fit with my values. Totally, yeah. Get that. Totally, yeah. Understand that. Totally on board with that. I'm totally down with people trying to take their ethics to the most logical conclusion they can. But I also think that it might be too much if someone's like, I want to go vegan and I found this cool vegan cheese. And you're like, oh, that's Daya. You can't buy them because of this. You know, I feel like it does more harm than good to kind of take that position.
Especially because Daya is, you know, it's the thing that you're going to find in a lot of restaurants, especially places that don't have a lot of vegan options. Like, that might be in restaurants the vegan option, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it is ubiquitous. Is that
this Daya well has run dry?
Is that the bottom of the Daya? God, I'm just thinking about being stuck in a pool of melted Daya and how horrible that would be. Oh, man. Like, it's like quicksand for the vegan 21st century.
I will say, you can make a good cheese sauce out of it.
Yeah,
that blackbird cheese sauce,
is that Daya?
I only recently found out it is Daya. I thought it was like nutritional yeast. I thought it was healthy. And it was not. It's just melted Daya and butter, earthbound.
So as we try and crawl our way out of this gooey melting quicksand of Daya that we've got ourselves into, we want to know what everyone out there has to say about this topic. Are you going to continue to buy Daya? Are you gung-ho? Are you like, anyone that doesn't buy Daya now is hurting animals? Or do you think the opposite? Are you hurting animals if you buy Daya? Let us know what you think. Send us an email, thebeardvegans@gmail.com. We all got the Instagram. We got the Facebook. Leave us an iTunes review if you're a nice person. And I know you are.
Tell us what you think about Daya on that iTunes review. host didn't want to boycott Daya. One star. So what do you got coming up, Andy?
Oh, well, this weekend, August 12th, I'll be at the Hudson Valley Vegan Food Festival in Newburgh, New York. September 2nd, Paul's going to be at the DC Veg Fest in Washington, D.C. Yay. September 16th, I'll be at the NEPA Veg Fest in Scranton, PA, where I'll also be a speaker. And September 30th, I'll be at the Phoenixville Veg Fest in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And that brings us through to the end of September, but I got plenty of deets and dates and links for events October and November. So head over to CompassionCo.com to get those DDLs.
And what else is happening in September, Andy?
Oh, I haven't had it on my calendar yet. September 7th and 8th and 9th, we'll be at the Toronto Veg Fest. And on the 9th of September, we will be doing a live podcast recording with a cool guest, TBA.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, come on out. Come on out. Good catch, Paul.
Thank you.
So, Paul, we had our first ever fan fiction sent us an email, and it detailed this story in intricate detail, and it was us as vegan cowboys. We rode vegan horses made out of tofu out in the Wild West, and as that tends to do in the Wild West, there was quicksand, but it was not quicksand. It was actually that Daya tar pit that we were talking about, and Paul got sucked into this, fell off the vegan horse, got sucked underneath, and I like ran over and I threw a rope, but he couldn't grab the rope, and I like reached my hand out, and it was like those things where you're like 2 inches from each other and you like can't actually catch each other, and I was like, Paul, what do you want me to put on your tombstone when you die? What are your final words? And they were the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing up.
Had an itch I could not scratch. Didn't have to be enough in my back. Don't know what's worse, the pain or the surprise. Now with every breath I take, I feel my spirit crack, my spirit break. For what you've done, I'm gonna make you pay. Stab you in the back. Backstabber, gonna stab you in the back.
Stab you in the back, stab you in the back. Stab you in the back, stab you in the back. Stab you in the back, stab you in the back.
In his lengthy reply to the critics, attorney Adam Milasinchik. It's my first time actually looking at that last name. In his lengthy reply, the critic's attorney, Adam... like the easiest word to say. Yeah. Apologies, Adam. Wrote, there is no doubt that this lawsuit is designed to... that this lawsuit is designed to achieve... Fuck. What this lawsuit is designed to achieve?
A local animal liberation movement. A group... Aaron and Monica Rocchino, I think that's how that's pronounced.
Sure, I don't know. Rocchino?
I'm going with Rocchino.
Well, from what I gathered, squeak chair. It feels like a really weird street racing. The internet is ablaze with the furious.
You should boycott Daya. Is what Daya doing? Is what Daya doing? Kind of.
Say it again.
Or, is what? God, how do I phrase that? Amy's, not
Amy's.
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 Yeah. All right, Paul. Well, as we try and crawl our way out of this sinking, what was it? Sinking sand?
Quicksand.
I don't know. It's like, whatever.